This episode is brought to you by Goalie. Did you know the University of Michigan did a study that found over 80% of apps for kids are designed to lure them into longer gameplay and more in-app purchases? Goalie decided it was time for this to end. Unlike the Kindle and iPad that have endless ads and potentially dangerous content, Goalie is a tablet with only apps that build independent kids. It has no web browser, no social media, and no ads, ever. It has award-winning learning apps like Khan Academy, Duolingo ABC, and Starfall, and the best part? It's completely parent-controlled. In my house, we use Goalie's kids' calendar to teach my son how to stay on task. He learns life skills like how to make a sandwich by watching one of the hundreds of video classes and can practice it by following along with one of the 50 pre-made routines. As a dad, there's no better feeling than knowing that my son is becoming more independent every day. For more information and to try Goalie risk-free for 30 days, visit getgoalie.com. That's GETGOALLY.com and use the code TheAutismDad to save 10%. Welcome to the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm Rob Gorski. As a single dad to three amazing autistic kids, I've been the go-to global resource for autism parenting since 2010. For the past seven seasons, this podcast has provided parents with education, connection, resources, validation, and hope. This season, you'll hear from parents just like you, as well as my own kids, who will offer their unique perspective on what it's like for them to navigate the world as young autistic people. I'll feature experts from across various relevant fields, from parenting and education to therapies, nutrition, self-care, and more. So join us each week and connect with people who get it. You can subscribe on any one of your favorite podcast listening apps. And for more information, to be a guest, or learn about sponsorship opportunities, please visit theautismdad.link. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to tune in. I really appreciate it. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about some tough stuff. And we're going to talk about things that so many of you experience in your daily life, but are maybe uncomfortable talking about openly for fear of judgment or ridicule, or there's just stigma attached to things, or maybe you feel like a bad parent because you're feeling things that you feel guilty for or whatever. You are not alone. You are so not alone. There are so many of you out there. I happen to be one of them. And my guest today is one of them too. And her name is Amber Arrington. She is a mom of six and three of her kids are autistic. And we're going to talk about some of her experiences, specifically with her oldest, as she navigated things like guardianship and group homes and having to deal with making choices that were for the betterment of the entire family. It's tough. It really is. I'm dealing with that right now with my oldest, navigating group homes and that transition to adulthood and having to deal with, you know, challenges with coexisting with our older autistic kids. So thank you all so much for taking the time to tune in. I really appreciate it. And I hope you guys find this helpful and insightful. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I really appreciate it. Could you take a moment, introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, you bet, Rob. I'm so grateful to be here with you today as well. Well, my name is Amber Arrington. My company is Autism Savvy. I'm a mother to six children total, but three of them whom are autistic.
I'm the oldest of six, and it's unusual to come across large families, I think, like that anymore.
I know, it's pretty unheard of. And really, I feel I had two families because I had four, mm-hmm. and then I had two, because they're not all growing up together, but nonetheless, there are six.
Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that we wanted to really take on today was just talking about things that are uncomfortable to talk about, or like experiences when you're a parent raising a child with a disability that maybe there's like stigma attached to, or you feel uncomfortable talking about just because you're afraid of judgment or ridicule or whatever. So that's what we wanted to do today. And because this is sort of a sensitive thing and can be a little bit uncomfortable to, you know, kind of get started, I figured that I would go first and I'll just sort of throw myself under the bus and we'll just get it started that way.
Okay.
And then we can kind of go back and forth from there. Will that work?
You go first.
Awesome. All right. Okay. So I have been very honest in everything that I have done over the years. And, you know, I think it's important that we do that because, you know, social media is like a highlight reel for everybody, right? Like you show the highlights of what's going on. And a lot of times there's struggle that just doesn't get shared or talked about for whatever reason. And, you know, along the way, I've been very open about the struggles. And then I sort of just kind of not stopped doing that, but as my kids got older, it became a little harder to sort of navigate some of that stuff, for, you know, because of privacy issues and concerns and whatever. But, you know, with my oldest now, Gavin, he's 24 and he is transitioning into his adult life and he's getting ready to move out. He's got his first job and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, like we need him to move out. We're just going to rip the bandaid off. Like we need him to move out. I know that sounds terrible. But if you're in a similar situation, you probably can just feel exactly where I'm coming from with this because it's not like he's doing anything wrong because he's not, but he's sort of outgrown the house, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. it creates a lot of tension, amongst his brothers, for example, just because like he's sort of like a walking conundrum where he's 24 years old, like chronologically, but developmentally we're not quite there. And in a lot of ways, I think we're just now sort of entering the teenage years with him. So he's like a 24 year old teenager, which, you know, is complicated because he's legally an adult and can make his own decisions, but he makes decisions with some of that impulse that like maybe a teenager would do, I guess, at times. And it's progress because he was much younger than that prior to this. So he's making headway, which is good. But you know, I feel like the only way to really help him to move past this point in his life is for him to be on his own, where he's independent from me as his primary caregiver, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, I know you talked to Carrie Cariello.
You told me about her, and I started following her.
Yeah, we mm-hmm. were talking about that, and you know, she calls it untethering, and yes. It's a really great way to look at this. I'm at that phase right now with him where I'm untethering, and mm-hmm. we're all looking forward to him moving out, and I feel okay saying that because not only is it going to benefit us, like myself and the other two boys, but it's also what he wants, like more than anything, yeah. And so I want that for him, and I want that for us because there's a lot of stress when you're trying to navigate some of these things. And people don't like maybe to hear that, I guess.
Yes, because, okay, obviously this is a different conversation for those who are raising non-speaking kiddos, potentially, probably, that just assume they're going to live with them forever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's become an expectation that if you have an autistic kiddo, they're probably going to live with you forever, regardless of their ability, their level, so to speak. And so that's why we first connected, because I was like, I don't think anybody's talking about this version of autistic young adults that are higher functioning. I hate that term, but they have lower needs, but they still have needs. Mm-hmm. And they maybe need to consider a group home. Or maybe we need to consider that for them.
Yeah. So that's another good point, right? Like the idea of sending our kids to a group home, I think, well, so just so everybody's on the same page, like a group home here, like in Ohio where I live, a group home is just, it's either a house or a duplex or whatever the situation is. And it's just shared by a number of people in similar situations mm-hmm. to Gavin, right? So he would be with people who are with peers, basically. And then they just divide the rent amongst however many people are there, and that's it. And they have, you know, the provider will have somebody who is on staff there to mm-hmm. help manage things, you know, remind for medications or appointments or stuff like that. And that sort of untethers them from their parents in a way, right? And I think, like, I really struggled with the idea of the group home just because of sort of the stigma, I think, that's attached to that. Mm-hmm. But I sat Gavin down in an interview, and if I remember, I'll link it in the show notes, where I asked him, like, what does independence look like for him? You know, because I know what other people think about him moving to a group home, but what does he think about it? Like, what does he want for himself? And he said that he wants to live in a group home because he wants to live with friends. And he doesn't feel like he's ready to be completely independent yet, but he's open to that at some point. And he feels like for the first time since for the moment that he moves out at this point in his life, that he feels that a group home is the best fit for him. And he thinks it'll be fun and, you know, be able to have roommates and friends, and hopefully they all have similar likes and dislikes and, you know, stuff like that. And they like people to talk to them all the time because Gavin's a talker, and you know, and I think that he, like, he's excited about it. He's looking forward to it. He's building towards that. And if I, like, hadn't stopped to ask him, like, what it is that he actually wanted, then I wouldn't have known that. I would have assumed that this is just the direction that we were going in because it makes the most sense, but not that, but not because it's what he actually wanted. And when you learn that as a parent, I think it helps to kind of set aside the guilt, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. When it's what they want, when it's a win-win, I mean, why not explore that? Because there will be some autistic kids that are low support needs that are going to move out on their own. They're going to have jobs. They're going to have pay for their own apartment. They're going to handle their responsibilities. But guess what? There are also some like mine who are low support needs, but also who need support and who are not going to be able to manage their money, who are not going to be able to hold down that job, who are not going to remember to eat, sleep, take their medication, wash their clothes, and need that support.
Yeah. And, you know, so when you, let me ask you this, when you think of your son being independent, do you, what does that look like for you?
I think he's living his version of independence right now. Mm-hmm. Our dream for his life and his dream for his life are two very different dreams, unfortunately.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I'd love to paint a picture for your listeners of what this group home experience is like.
Go for it.
And how, so that people can imagine what this possibly could be for their kiddo. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we're in Arizona. So this group home is paid for, at first it was paid for by the state because he was qualified for our state disability agency. Once I got him qualified for Social Security, Social Security pays for it. So it's not a financial burden on our family to pay for the group home. It's paid for him. So that's nice. It was something he was ready to do. He moved out when he was 18. And the only reason I felt comfortable moving forward here, it took me years to warm up to it, was because I had a client who ran group homes in my state for men with disabilities. And it took me years of meeting with her. I would be doing her eyebrows and she would be telling me about her group home and about state disability services. And I, at first I thought, oh, that's sad. Like, I would never send my child to a group home. But as I learned more and then I eventually went and toured it, I began to see this could be a really great win-win for my son and for our family. Cause he was tired of us having our thumb on him. He wanted to feel like he was kind of like going away to college somehow. And so this gave him the sense of independence because now he still has support. He still gets prompted, but now he's an adult. He's within his rights to say no. He's within his rights to not do things. Another piece of this, which I feel like is also taboo, is we did apply for guardianship of our son when he was 18. This is not necessary for everybody. And some people are like totally against this. This is what was necessary for us and our child. Obviously we thought so, or we wouldn't have moved forward with it. The courts granted us guardianship of him so we can help support in the medical decisions, in the life-making decisions. But what this, what the group home looks like for him is similar to what you described. Like, it's literally a house. There are three bedrooms. He has one roommate. There's 24/7 staff. So there's people there to cook for him, prompt him, make sure he takes his meds, take him to and from either work or his day program, you know, make sure he's getting his laundry done, reminding him to go to bed. He's still within his rights to not do things. And that is a struggle big time. I can't, when he was in my home, I could kind of more make things get done, which I think is what he wanted to get away from. So it's like, it's that type of thing, but he has that. Now, there has been a big load off my shoulders as far as responsibility day to day of caring for him, but it is by no means like, see ya, it was nice knowing you. No, he can come home when he wants. We have him home for holidays. We take him to the movies. We go take him for haircuts. We take him out to dinner. Like, whatever he wants, we'll still do that. And there was another piece I wanted to not leave out. I forgot it. I guess we'll come back to it. I just really wanted to paint a picture of what like day-to-day life is like in a group home. So,
you know, one of the things that's really important about this conversation is that we talk about the things that people maybe innately feel shame about, I guess, if that makes sense, or they feel, or maybe they're judged for some of this stuff, right? Because, you know, when I, you know, Gavin is 24. I've raised him since he was a year old. I adopted him when he was, I think it was around eight or nine, something like that. I mean, it blends together because the adoption, not that it was meaningless to me, but like I didn't change anything for me, if that makes sense. Like I've raised him as my own since he was a little kid. But when I come to some of these decisions, you know, that's when some of these more difficult things tend to surface. You know, it's, you know, he causes a lot of tension in the house. Just being himself, he's difficult to coexist with at times. He's a talker, and he doesn't read the room very well. So he will just talk at you until you just can't take it anymore. And that really stresses his brothers out because they don't like that. They want him to stop, and he doesn't stop when they ask him to. And he'll follow them around, just, you know, talking. And that's tough. I mean, it's tough to deal with. And I realize that, like, you know, there's a lot of families out there with non-speaking kids who maybe don't understand what that is, or maybe sounds like it's, I don't know, like disingenuous or something. But I mean, my youngest was non-speaking too for the first, you know, 4.5 years of his life. So I do have some insight into what those challenges were like as well. But everything, when you are faced with it day in and day out, can be a challenge, you know, and it can just wear you down. And, you know, I used to feel so guilty about the frustration or the anger or even sometimes resentment, I think, for certain behaviors, never him necessarily, but just the situation as a whole or behaviors or habits or routines that just are so disruptive to everybody else, but like he needs in order to kind of make it through his day. And so the idea of him moving out is, it's like a godsend for us, you know? And I was convinced that I was going to be living with him, or he was going to be living with me for the rest of my life. And then I had to worry about what I was going to do after that. But we were locked in the house for COVID for 15 months because he's immunocompromised. We couldn't have any contact with anybody. And he decided that he had enough of us and he wanted to move out. So we've been prepping for the last few years to kind of get him to that point. And, you know, it's okay to need something for everybody else. And sometimes that coincides with what's best for the other kid. Like in Gavin's case, he wants to move out more than anything. So that's what he needs to do for himself. So we want that for him. But him moving out also benefits the rest of us because it's a reduction of stress in the house. It kind of changes up the dynamic, right? And people can kind of, you know, grow in a way that they really can't right now, if that makes sense. This episode is brought to you by Mightier. Mightier is a biofeedback-based video game platform that teaches kids to emotionally self-regulate. This leads to a significant reduction in meltdowns and parental stress. It's backed by science out of Harvard Medical and Boston Children's and has helped over 100,000 kids. For more information, visit theautismdad.com/mightier. That's theautismdad.com/MIGHTIER and use the code theautismdad22 to save 10%.
It makes so much sense. And I wanted to piggyback on that because I felt the same way. And that is the thing that feels shameful to really admit sometimes, is like the energy in the house is affected sometimes by certain individuals in our house. Okay. That was the case for us. We were ready. We were so ready, but also he was ready. And that's why it worked out so well when the timing finally came right. And you're right. It does take a big reduction of stress off of your shoulders and even just like the dynamics in the house. But also, this is what I was going to say before. While it does take the, you know, you get that separation from each other, it allows you to connect in a different way. You still have your responsibilities. I still have to meet with staff every 90 days. I still have to field staff calls coming in on a daily or weekly basis about his behavior or his choices and trying to mediate it. I still have to attend either in person or via Zoom med check appointments or, you know, but the nice thing is they make the appointments now. I don't have to do it. They make sure he's getting his dental exam. They take him to the doctor if he's feeling sick. So like a little of that load is lighter, but we're still totally remained plugged in for his care.
Yeah. And so I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, just because our kids turn into adults and maybe they even move out, right, does not mean that we stop being parents. It just sort of changes the nature of what we consider parenting, maybe. And, you know, like right now, Gavin is so used to me micromanaging his life because that's what's been necessary for everything.
Yeah.
That he can only grow so much in this environment. And for him to live his independent life, he needs to be independent from me, if that makes sense.
Yep.
To where yes. he's, even if someone else has to help him in the exact same ways that I would, it's somebody else doing it, right? So he has sort of flown the nest, and he is utilizing supports and services that are in place to help him do all these things that he needs to do whilst not living at home, you know, and being able to live on his own and manage his own life and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I struggled with that for a long time, especially when we first started, like, with the board of DD and job training, because I don't have guardianship, right? I chose not to pursue that, just because could I have? I probably could have.
Mm-hmm.
Should I have? Maybe, you know, I don't know yet. what I know is that, you know, at the time I found that power of attorney for me worked out well enough because it allowed me access to manage finances or to, even making doctor's appointments once they're over 18 you're limited what you can do. All these things just sort of drop off that you're used to doing. And power of attorney allowed me the ability to continue what I've always been doing without, I guess, stripping him of the ability to do those things for himself if he could do that at some point. And I think he can. I think he can. But we just haven't really tested that out yet, if that makes sense. But, you know, I know a lot of parents who pursue guardianship, and everybody goes through that same thing where there's guilt and you feel just awful having to, because essentially you go to court and you have your child declared legally incompetent and you have to make the decisions for them, which feels awful as a parent. But at the same time, you have to protect them.
Yeah. I feel embarrassed to say it on social media, but I didn't feel embarrassed. I'm glad I could do it, because that if he was left to his own after 18, if the ability for me to help him make his decisions, if I couldn't know what happened at a doctor's appointment, first of all, doctor's appointments would never even get made.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't know how to make a phone call. He would not know. It was a blessing for me to be able to get guardianship for my son so I can help him.
Mm-hmm.
But I am bummed out that it does feel so hard. I mean, it shouldn't be taken lightly, and it wouldn't be. We wouldn't take that light. Nobody would take that lightly.
Well, and they don't make it easy either. I mean,
they don't.
Yeah, it's a process.
It's a whole process. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. But if you feel so confident in the decision, then why if you posted it about it or talked about it publicly, why would that feel different?
Well, I'm new to social media.
Okay.
And I'm developing thick skin. There are people that will have very strong opinions about it.
Okay.
There. That's all.
Okay.
But in general, I would talk openly about it.
It's just sort of the reaction that you might get from people. And you're right. You would. You get people who totally relate to it, and you get people who would judge you all day and night just because maybe their kid didn't need to have that done. So like, why would you need to do it for yours? Cause people don't understand. Like I've been doing this for like since 2009. Right. And one of the most consistent things across the board is that we fail to recognize how different every family is, you know, and just because like you have three kids, that are autistic, I have three kids that are autistic. Our kids can be just polar opposites of each other. They can be very, very different, even though they have the same diagnosis.
Yes.
And for me to assume anything about what you're doing based on what my kids need is just insane. And I don't understand why we continue to do that. Like it's one of those mantras that we have during Autism Awareness Month or whatever, where we're just like, everybody's different. Everybody's unique. Don't judge one person because you met somebody else. And yet we do it ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
Whether it's with school or guardianship or in some, you know, independent living or job related things, whatever it is, like we judge each other so harshly. And
well, it has to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, it does have, and I think a lot of it on social media would be probably adult autistic people that would be saying, how dare you take your son's rights away from him? Like that, that would be what would happen. And, but it goes back to what you're saying, like, come walk a day in my shoes and then you can make the best decision that you can.
Yeah. It's not about stripping our kids of their rights or not giving them a voice. It's about, like, we know our kids better than anyone else does, and we want them to be safe. And the ability to make decisions for them is like, it's when they can't make the decision for themselves. It just allows us the ability to step in the event that we need to, without having to, you know, go through all this red tape and whatever. We have the ability to intervene if and when it's deemed necessary. But none of us want to. Right. I mean, we want our kids to be able to do all this stuff on their own. We want to be able to let go and, you know, have a life after our kids. So there's no like, there's no payout for us. It's not a power, it's not a power grab or anything like that. There's no prize for, you know, having guardianship. It's a tremendous amount. It's almost more responsibility than when they were kids, because you have to account for every single everything and you answer to everybody.
I have to manage. So like I have six kids and I have to manage the guardianship of a grown adult.
Yeah.
Like after my meeting with you today, I'm meeting with someone to talk about Social Security and vocational rehab for him, because I'm trying to get my bearings on all of this now in this new space. Like he's not doing it for himself. I have to manage it. Mm-hmm. Like it's not something that we choose. And frankly, it's something that takes a lot of us a long time to realize we're really looking at least for me, my son didn't get his medical diagnosis till he was 12. It probably wasn't until he was 12 that I fully started to understand that his future wasn't going to be like maybe a typical quote unquote kid's future that, like he might not be holding down a job and he might not move out and know how to pay for an apartment and he might not go to college. And I think I might have to really like manage this stuff for him. And that's a hard pill to swallow. And it's sad. Like there's some grieving with that. None of this is taken lightly. Like none of this is done lightly.
Yeah. I wish people knew that, right? It's sort of like I was at therapy with one of my kids the other day and we were talking about anxiety and all that stuff. And you know, she made the reference to an iceberg, right? Like people see that the tiny piece that's above water, right? And so they just see, oh, you went and you did this, or oh, you made this decision. What they don't see is everything that's beneath the surface, all of the reasons why you have to make the decisions that we have to make for our kids. And you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, there is a lot of shame and there's a lot of judgment and stuff online. And you know, my hope is that by like openly talking about some of this stuff that it just sort of helps other people to recognize that they're not alone.
Yeah. To be able to normalize this conversation, there are so many people on social media. Just in general, I feel like we're talking about the younger kids, right? I have a 3.5 and a 5-year-old autistic daughters too. So I'm also in that world and it's about talking and potty training and all the things. Mm-hmm. Or the non-speaking kids and AAC and spelling to communicate and all the things. But there's this window of people that is being left out almost. We're not talking about them. And they have needs too. And we're managing for them too. And I think, I don't know, I guess we're starting that conversation here today, Rob, like more openly. Like we need to talk about Social Security and guardianship and group homes.
Yeah. And you know, my son, and I was open about this too when he was little, like, his behaviors were so difficult to manage when he was younger, like 7, 8, 9 age group or age range, that, you know, we were told to look for residential placement, like to have him to remove him from the home because of the safety issues to the other kids. Now he wasn't like going after anybody. It was all like self-injurious or just destructive environmental things. But there's collateral damage, you know, there's trauma mm-hmm. being exposed to that kind of stuff. And so we finally had to make the decision to pursue that. Ultimately, we couldn't, just because there wasn't any place available, you know, locally that we felt comfortable placing him. But the amount of guilt that I felt, and I was the hang up to the whole process. Like, I was refusing to even think about something like that for the longest time. But ultimately, you know, even when you have to make decisions like that, you have to make a decision based on what's best for the whole sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's not sacrificing somebody. It's you are unable to meet their needs in the environment that they're in, because if you were able to meet their needs, then there wouldn't be, you know, there may not be as much challenge or disruptive issues. Right. And it's not that, we're less of a parent or we're not trying hard enough or that they're bad kids. It's just, there's just a combination of factors that make it difficult to coexist. And when you place somebody in a residential facility like that, the idea is for them to go and learn the skills that they need to better interact with the world, with the ultimate goal of reuniting everybody at home. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but you know, there's lots of families out there who have to make decisions like that. And we don't talk about that either, because there's that shame and that stigma and judgment attached to making those decisions, you know? And
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think you said that so eloquently, I couldn't have said it any better. And I will just add that we were probably, by the time he was 16, we were really feeling like we're going to need to do something different. This is not, the whole family is having a hard time because our kiddo was having such a hard time. And then that's real life. So I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. It's, you know, I don't know why we struggle with that so much. But like for me, it was, I couldn't fix it. And so I didn't know what to do. And then you can't fix it means that I'm not trying hard enough, or I don't know enough to do, you know what I mean? So it's like, you're letting somebody down and you just feel all this emotion, that we don't talk about, you know, and a lot of times we allow that to impact the decisions that we make for our kids. And that's sometimes not the right thing to do.
I just want, you know, a takeaway for whoever's listening to be, at least, because you guys are shopping it. We've been doing it for a couple years, meaning my son's been in a group home for 2 years. Mm-hmm. November was 2 years. Facilitating my son into a habilitation group home at age 18 was the best decision we could have made for him and for our family. And I'm really happy we have done this. I don't know how it'll go in the future. I hope he can move out on his own at some point. But for now, like, this has been a huge win for our family. And I guess want people to understand that it can be a positive experience. It's probably harder to find group homes you can trust. Of course, that's going to be something you have to shop and do your due diligence and come up short a lot of times on. But when it works, at least for us, it's been a really great experience.
How is he doing?
Well, I mean, he's happy.
Okay.
I wouldn't say he's thriving. He has all the same struggles he had when he lived at home. It's just someone else managing them day to day rather than us. So we still have the same goals. We're still working on just going to sleep, not gaming 20 hours, personal hygiene, and for motivation to do more than gaming. So we have those kind of things we're dealing with.
But he's happy.
He's happy. He wouldn't want to come back home.
So, and I think that's for sure. I think that's where a lot of parents get hung up. Like, they want their kids to be happy, and how could they be happy in that type of environment? Mm-hmm. And you know, they can be.
They can be. And my son goes to it's called the DTA, a day treatment program, which frankly he doesn't fit there. His functioning level is he is very low needs. And some of the kiddos and young adults that go to that day treatment center are very high needs. Mm-hmm. So that is, I don't envision him there and I don't want him there. That's why I'm working on vocational rehab, so we can get him going back to school or working. He can work. He held down a part-time job at the Quick Quack car wash for a year when he lived at home. He doesn't have motivation to really do that now. He's just kind of like chilling right now. But you know, for now it's okay. And we'll just continue to try to progress.
One step at a time. Mm-hmm. One step at a time. Yeah. So, you know, we just wanted to kind of, we didn't really ease into this conversation. We just sort of like jumped down the rabbit hole because we wanted to try and squeeze in as much as we could, in this time slot. So I really appreciate you sharing as openly and honestly as you have, because I know that it's not easy to do that. But I think it helps a lot of people.
It's been my pleasure. I'm here to just help parents navigating an autism diagnosis with their child at any age. And this is part of it. This is part of it that we need to talk about more.
So before we go, what is Autism Savvy? So let's just plug that and talk a little bit about that so people can know where to connect and what you do and stuff like that.
Yeah. Autism Savvy is a company. I just started it official this year, 2024. I left my previous life in the beauty world and my business and all my success there. And I said, I've been doing autism for 20 years. What would be the most fulfilling way for me to like spend my life serving others? And this is where I landed, because it's a big part of our life. And I just have learned so much at this point. And I have such a heart for parents struggling, particularly through a new diagnosis, mm-hmm. at whatever age that's happening for their child. I wanted to put together something that was more than a free Facebook group, something that was more than a free Zoom call, just kind of a neutral source to gain information, to access experts, to educate themselves, to come to understand that autism is not so scary, and to be able to connect them with the resources they need. So that's Autism Savvy.
Where can they find you?
So they can find me at autismsavvy.com. And for any of your listeners that are really new, do you want me to talk about the summit?
Sure.
Okay. We have the Autism Savvy Summit, the While You Wait edition, coming up at the end of the month. And they can learn more about it at autismsavvy.com, because that's a free event where parents can get education to help them support their autistic child at home.
Will there be like a replay or anything of that afterwards?
Yes. So it is a live event at the end of April, but then the recorded version goes into the Infinity Mom Club.
Okay.
So it will always be available to be accessed there.
Okay, cool. So thank you very much for being here. I have a feeling we'll probably do more episodes in the future, because we can take on like topics specific to this sort of area that people just don't like talking about,
but
need to hear about. So thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it.
It's been amazing to be here with you today. Thanks, Rob.
Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you so much for taking the time to tune in and for all the support you guys have shown me over the last 7 seasons. I am so grateful and appreciative of each and every one of you. If you have found this useful or you just enjoyed listening, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to this on, or share it with your friends or whatever, it's a great way to support the show. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys can reach me at theautismdad.link. That's theautismdad.link. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.